Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. With some people, you can only marvel at their accomplishments. James Madison was one. The fourth president, he was hailed as the father of the Constitution and was a key champion of the Bill of Rights. A friend of Jefferson's and a Secretary of State who oversaw the Louisiana Purchase, our guest today says that James Madison was the most indispensable of the founding fathers, save only for George Washington. Later on this hour, Barnett Helsberg talks with us about mentoring entrepreneurs. But first up, James Madison. Our guest is Jeff Broadwater, who's a professor of history at Barton College in North Carolina and author of James Madison, A Son of Virginia and a Founder of the Nation. Nice to have you. Good morning, Jeff.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
You know, the most indispensable founding father outside of George Washington, even more so than Jefferson or Adams. How so?
Well, I said that because of the role that Madison played in the adoption of the Constitution. Mm-hmm. He was really a critical figure at every step in the process, from calling the Constitutional Convention to putting the Virginia delegation together to recruiting George Washington to serve, and Washington's participation was critical to give the Constitutional Convention legitimacy. He co-authors the Federalist Papers. He leads the fight for ratification in Virginia, which was one of the key states. And then he almost single-handedly pushes the Bill of Rights through Congress. It's a very impressive list of accomplishments.
You know, you talk about him doing all this, and yet you also describe him, Jeff, as reserved, soft-spoken, and slightly built, seemingly incapable of fiery oratory. Was he dull? How did he manage to do all that stuff with a personality like that?
Well, we've got to keep in mind politics in his day was different.
Thank goodness.
But in his day, the ability to work with other politicians was more important than the ability to appeal to a large mass of voters. Of course, there was no television. Politicians didn't do very much campaigning. You communicated with voters mainly in writing, through newspaper articles and essays. And so Madison's reserved personality was not as great a disadvantage for him in his day as it would be today. But his intelligence, his work ethic, his integrity impressed his contemporaries. And I think that was one of the sources of his influence.
In fact, you say he worked so quietly that he sometimes obscured his own accomplishments. So I guess you're saying he wasn't a show-off by any extent.
No. And he was not comfortable in the spotlight. And I think it might have been really counterproductive for him to have sought the spotlight. The founders considered ambition to be a cardinal sin, and if you show too much ambition, think of Aaron Burr, perhaps that undercuts your credibility. So I think his reserve was an advantage to him. Joseph Ellis has a line about Madison that might be a little unfair, but I think it says something worthwhile that Madison. Almost seemed to lack a personal agenda because he seemed to lack a personality or something like that. I'm paraphrasing Ellis, but that the sort of the blandness was in some ways an asset, I think.
Back in those days.
In those days.
Wonder how he'd do in a TV age today, how he'd come across. Probably not all that well.
Probably not all that well. His sentences would be too long. The words would have too many syllables. He wasn't. Now, Jefferson could produce sound bites, but that was not Madison's forte.
And yet James Madison knew how to win elections too, right?
Yes.
of elections.
Yes, he did. He lost the first election that he ever ran in. He didn't treat the voters. And in those days, and this was 18th century Virginia, you were expected to provide the voters with liquor on election day. And he disapproved of that custom.
Imagine that.
It was the first time he ran for a seat in the House of Delegates. He didn't treat the voters, and he lost the race. He never made that mistake again and never lost another election.
He got over that and supplied the liquor in the years.
As long as the voters expected liquor, he provided it and never lost another election.
Well, this very reserved man, what did he find about politics that was so appealing for him?
That's a good question, and I think in his day, politics offered a forum for the best minds of the era. If you think about the Middle Ages, medieval Europe, you know, where did the most talented people go? They tended to go into the church. You know, in the 20th century, you know, where would you look to find the smartest people today? Probably in science.
Mm-hmm.
But in his day, it was very often politics that attracted the great minds of the era. Jefferson, Franklin, of course, Franklin was a scientist too. But it was a sort of a unique period in history, I think, where politics and government service offered great challenges and opportunities for people with the kind of ability that Madison had.
And that kind of intellectual challenge was
very
appealing.
Yes, an intellectual challenge.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
This was interesting to me. James Madison had a better sense of humor than Thomas Jefferson, who was much more charismatic. What would James Madison crack wise about?
Well, I didn't go
a bawdy sense of humor.
He really liked sort of off color jokes, and I guess because the jokes were a little risque, very few of them were recorded or written down. But a number of people remarked that Madison did like to tell off color jokes, and then just kind of left it at that. That was in small groups. In large groups, he was very reserved, and very formal. But he could really clown around when he was with friends.
We're talking about the president, James Madison, our fourth president, as part of an ongoing series of shows on the presidency being sponsored by the Kansas City Public Library. Our guest today, Jeff Broadwater, an author of a new book on James Madison, a son of Virginia and a founder of the nation, will be speaking at 6:30 this evening at the Plaza branch of the Kansas City Public Library. You can grab a seat by going to kclibrary.org. You know, Jeff, we think about these people, these founding fathers, as such cardboard caricatures of themselves. What did James Madison do for kicks? Do you have any sense of that?
Well, he was for recreation. No, I mean he had really politics was his life. He was not as versatile, say, as Jefferson was. He didn't have Jefferson's interest in music or agriculture. I guess I would say that next to politics, Madison's great interest was in Mount Pelier, mm-hmm. in his plantation, and particularly in experimenting with new agricultural techniques, new crops, to improve the plantation. But he wasn't interested in horse racing was a popular pastime mm-hmm. with Virginians in the 18th century. And he does not seem to be too interested in that.
You know, one man, the French diplomat Louis Otto, once wrote of him that a man must study James Madison for a long time in order to make a fair appraisal of him. I thought that said a whole lot. Did it take you a long time to sort of assess James Madison?
He is, in a way, a tough nut to crack.
Inscrutable
in some ways. And I think partly that was due to his intelligence and the fact that he really dealt in nuance and subtlety. And you have to read Madison's writings very closely and look at the context to try to tease the meaning out. He didn't have the sort of flair for the sweeping generalizations, say, that Jefferson did. He was a very precise writer and thinker, so you have to listen to him carefully to try to tease out a meaning.
And he was not a man who was ever engulfed in scandal very much.
No, that was one of the points that I made in the book, that there are no scandals in his closet. And that was, I think, one of the reasons for his success. There were never any real questions about his character or his motives.
Yeah. These concepts that we associate James Madison with, separation of church and state, concepts like that, where do they come from in James Madison's life?
The idea of separation of church and state was an idea, I think, born in the European Enlightenment, a response to the religious wars that Europe had experienced, and also just a recognition of the reality in Virginia and throughout many of the colonies. The American colonies were very diverse religiously, and I think Madison and most of the other founders understood that it really didn't make sense to have an established church when there was no one church that represented the great majority of the people, that tolerance, religious freedom, and the separation of church and state was the only way that a democratic society that was religiously diverse could function.
So these ideas on these big, heavy concepts that still guide us today, yes, and influence us today, separation of church and state, states' rights, these weren't original ideas to James Madison, or in some cases, were they?
No, they weren't. They weren't entirely original, and they were very often a product of concrete, specific problems that they were dealing with in their time. Madison's most famous insight is this idea of about of factions, or what we would call interest groups, that Madison believed that the different interest groups in society could serve as a sort of an informal system of checks and balances, mm-hmm, on each other and protect, mm-hmm, individual rights. But that idea, the origins of that went back to a man named John Winthrop, who'd been president of Princeton, where Madison went to school. David Hume, the English philosopher, yeah, had a version of that. So what in most cases the founders are doing, I'd say really two things. They're elaborating on ideas that they picked up from English and continental philosophers, and also responding to the particular situation in the American colonies or the American states.
Jeff Broadwater is our guest. He's the author of a book, James Madison, A Son of Virginia and a Founder of the Nation. If you have a question about one of our key founding fathers, 816-235-2888, our email address, update@kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page. This issue, you hear so much about these guys and this notion of what you just were saying, these checks and balances, one branch of government versus another. You know, inherent in that idea, Jeff, it seems to me, is that's a very pessimistic view of humankind, that we can't give the president too much power. We can't give Congress too much power because we are such flawed individuals that we will take advantage of it if we get too much power. What do you say to that?
I think there's some truth to that, but I would describe Madison's view of human nature as perhaps sympathetic, but not uncritical. Because while it's true that Madison said many times that he thought there needed to be this system of checks and balances, that he didn't trust the majority as it was constituted at any particular time. But he also says this at the Virginia Convention that was called to consider ratification of the Constitution, that he has to assume that most of the time the voters will elect responsible leaders, that he says Republican government assumes a certain degree of virtue in the citizens. They're not perfect. There's a great line that I think, as I recall, comes from that convention, where he says that if every Athenian citizen had been a Socrates, every Athenian assembly would still have been a mob. he had a reservation, let's say, about the majority of people, but that he thought there was enough virtue there to justify, mm-hmm, to support a democratic system.
So was he a big states' rights guy, or was he a big, powerful central government guy, or was he both?
I think he was a little bit of both and maybe something in between. What I see in Madison is a man that was trying to achieve balance between the federal government and the state governments. And in, say, the 1780s, when he thought the balance was shifting in favor of the state governments, he wanted to replace the Articles of Confederation with the Constitution and establish a stronger central government under the Constitution. In the 1790s, he's afraid the federal government is becoming a little too strong, so he wants to shift power back to the states. So I think that would be my answer to that question, that he wants to establish a balance between federal and state authority.
How did he feel, you know, throughout his life as someone who created this United States of America and helped piece it together and help stitch together these different concepts? He became president in the 1800s. He lived long enough to see how this country was sort of coming together and progressing, if you will, yeah, or digressing in some people's views. But how did he feel about what he had put together by the end of his life?
He considered it an experiment. And I found a letter that he wrote to Thomas Jefferson in which he tells Jefferson that, you know, that he considers this new government to be an experiment, and he's curious to see how it's going to work out. And what was remarkable to me about that letter, it was written in the 1820s. After he left office in 1817, this is several years after he's left the White House.
It's still an experiment.
And he's
at that
still
point.
Telling Jefferson in the 1820s, this is an experiment. It may work, it may not.
No kidding.
Yes.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's go to some phone calls here. 816-235-2888. Let's go to Alan from Lenexa. Alan, good morning.
Good morning. I know you were questioning a minute ago about the need for checks and balance. I was wondering, were the founding fathers afraid that without checks and balances, there could be a rise of an aristocracy that would try to take our democracy back towards a monarch like in England?
Yes, Madison came to worry about that in the 1790s. Earlier in his career, he had been worried about, as I mentioned earlier, the states assuming too much power. He worried about the misuse of political power by the majorities. But by the 1790s, after the Constitution has been adopted, yes, he does become concerned that an aristocracy, and it's this new Federalist Party that's emerging, is assuming too much power. And there are some concerns, and I don't know how much Madison really worried about a monarchy, but he did worry about the country going in that direction.
If he was concerned about the aristocracy, it has happened. There is an aristocracy taking over our government.
Okay. Yeah. Alan, thank you.
Thank you.
You know, you wonder what he would think today as he looked at our two-party system and sort of the way it's operating and, you know, the flood of money into our campaign system via the Citizens United case from the Supreme Court. Any sense of what he might see today as he looked out across the American landscape and if he'd be thrilled or concerned, or what do you think?
I think he would be concerned about the partisanship. The founders, really all of them, disliked political parties. They thought political parties were trouble. They were special interest groups that put their own agenda ahead of the general welfare.
And by George, there's a whole lot of truth to that, isn't there?
And ironically, political parties began to form immediately after the adoption of the Constitution, but it was not something that the founders are particularly proud of. And I think what they would typically say is, well, now the Federalists, these other fellas, that's a political party. Now, my group, we're not a political party. We're just concerned citizens interested in good government. They were very slow to recognize the legitimacy of political parties. And I think particularly the strict party line voting in Congress, the rhetoric, the overheated rhetoric we hear sometimes, I think that would concern Madison.
That's interesting. Yeah. Let's go to Carol from Kansas City, Missouri. Carol, you're on Up to Date with Jeff Broadwater. Good morning.
Thank you. I have a question about the Federalist Papers, which I understand Madison wrote. I'd like if you could explain what they were and that the Supreme Court justices today often refer to them. And what would Madison think of the day's concurrent Supreme Court as it's the power it has and the structure and everything?
Okay. Boy, great question. What were the Federalist Papers?
The Federalist Papers were a series of essays that Madison, Alexander Hamilton, and John Jay wrote for the New York City newspapers in the winter of 1787 and 1788. The papers or the essays were written to explain the Constitution and really to support ratification of the Constitution in the state of New York. And then they were later circulated throughout the colonies or the states and later published in book form. Madison considered the Federalist Papers one of the most cogent explanations of the Constitution that was available, although Madison said he thought that if you wanted to determine the original intent behind the Constitution, the place to go was the debates of the state conventions that ratified the Constitution. Mm. Because he said until the Constitution was ratified, it was just, he said, a dead letter. It was just a proposal. So he thought the best source for the intent of the founders was the state conventions, where the individual provisions had actually been debated and the conventions had approved the Constitution based on the understanding that emerged from those conventions.
Are there records of what happened at those conventions? Can we go back and look?
They're spotty.
Yeah.
It depends on the state.
Mm.
In Virginia, North Carolina, New York, Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, they're very good records, and they've been published, and they're in bound volumes now. Some of the states, as I recall, Georgia and South Carolina particularly, the records are spotty.
Yeah. Carol also had a question about the Supreme Court.
The Supreme Court. I'm not quite sure what Masson would think about today's Supreme Court. He really struggled with the role of the Supreme Court. Early in his career, he was uncomfortable with the idea that the Supreme Court could set aside decisions of Congress or state legislature. But he comes to the conclusion eventually that, well, there needs to be some oversight over the state legislatures to try to maintain some uniformity of federal law. And also with regard to acts of Congress, that he does eventually come to accept the idea that the Supreme Court could set aside acts of Congress. He was concerned that Congress might be too susceptible to political pressure to pass unconstitutional laws. He thought the Supreme Court would be more independent and could it would be easier for the Supreme Court to say no to a law that was popular but unconstitutional than it would be for Congress to do it.
Can you envision what he might say about the health care law that's going to be ruled on tomorrow by the Supreme Court?
That's a tough question because you've got to remember in his day, as far as I know, there's no such thing as health care. there was insurance. If you were a ship captain, you might insure your cargo, but beyond that, the concept of insurance was sort of foreign. I think it would take Masson a while to get his head around the idea of, first of all, health insurance and then the idea that the federal government would have some role in that.
But once he did, what do you think he'd say?
I think really what he might say was that if there was a consensus among the people that was what they wanted, and that consensus would hold for a period of time, that it wasn't just a sort of a transient whim.
Mm-hmm.
But if the majority of the people wanted it and they remain committed to it, he might be willing to accept it. I'm trying to think of an analogy. And one was the idea of Congress incorporating a national bank.
Mm-hmm.
And he was originally opposed to that.
But then?
But this is in the 1790s. He's opposed to it. By the time he becomes president, He changes his views, and he sees it's popular. It seems to serve a function, and so he sort of acquiesces in the popular will there.
Sean has a question about just that point. Sean from Overland Park, you're on the air. Good morning.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. I'm thrilled to listen to what's going on the news today because I was just doing some personal research about George Washington and the presidency, and I have two questions. One is Madison's thoughts about the centralized banking system in the country. And also, what did he think about Alexander Hamilton professionally and personally?
Okay.
Boy, great question, Sean.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, good questions. Madison was initially opposed to the centralization of banking under the Bank of the United States that Hamilton had proposed. But he eventually, Congress later creates a bank. The Supreme Court rules it's constitutional. It seems to be popular. Masson, I think, somewhat reluctantly accepts it. The question about Hamilton is interesting, and it's a hard question. They worked together on the Federalist Papers. They worked together at the Constitutional Convention. And then they have this – and, in fact, Masson recommended Hamilton to be Secretary of the Treasury. And then they almost immediately began to fall out on financial policy. He was not particularly close to Hamilton. They weren't.
His big buddy was Jefferson.
His best friend was Jefferson. He was very close to Jefferson and James Monroe. He was not personally close to Hamilton, but early in their career, they worked closely together. And then after Hamilton became Secretary of the Treasury and promoted the Bank of the United States and some other financial reforms, they had this falling out.
You know, we talked about all his virtues here. One of his downsides was his thinking on slavery, very
yes.
muddled.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Well,
how could a brilliant man be so unclear on something as critical as that?
Well, that's maybe the most one of the most difficult questions I faced working on the book. The short answer, the quick answer, the conclusion that I came to working on the book was that Masson was convinced that in his day, unless slaves could be freed and colonized, probably relocated to Africa, that white prejudice would make it impossible for the freed slaves to be integrated mm-hmm. into American society.
Mm-hmm.
That's the short of it, that he thought the cost of emancipation would outweigh the value of freedom to slaves unless they could be colonized.
Mm-hmm.
Colonization was a wholly impractical idea for any number of reasons, but Masson clung to it to the end of his life. I will say one thing in defense of Masson. He did support sort of half measures, like the prohibition of the African slave trade.
Mm-hmm.
He hoped, and a lot of people hoped, that if you could stop the importation of slaves in the United States, that would eventually lead to the abolition of slavery in America. That turned out to be wrong.
But that was a half step.
It was a half step. It mm-hmm. turned out to be wrong. But you could argue that in the, say, 1790s, early 1800s, when Americans or white Americans were talking about that, they didn't know how ineffective that would be.
Yeah.
But generally, his record on slavery is not – it's not good. He admits it's wrong. He never defends it. But he does support these sort of half measures like ending the foreign slave trade and colonization that are not going to be adequate to deal with the issue.
Jeff Broadwater is the author of James Madison, A Son of Virginia and a Founder of the Nation. You can see and hear him tonight at 6:30 at the Plaza Branch of the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library. Grab a seat by going to kclibrary.org. Time for a break. When we come back, we'll visit with Barnett Helsberg, who will talk with us about mentoring entrepreneurs. Jeff, thanks so much for your time. Great to have you. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR.